Willkommen zum Podcast der Initiative Regenerative Marktwirtschaft. Hier wollen wir herausfinden, wie man eine umweltfähige Zukunft macht.
Welcome to this episode of the podcast for the Initiative of the Regenerative Market Economy. And today, our guest is Janai. And I'm really happy to have you here this morning and learn from you about good life and how to build a good civilization. Before we go there, I'd really love to explore, who is Janai? How did you emerge? What happened to in the world for you to become you? And what are you doing with that?
Thank you for this beautiful invitation, Thomas. It's such a pleasure to be here. And I'm looking forward to sharing my journey and having this conversation with you. Let's start with my name, Janai. Jan means soul. I means moon in Turkish. I'm Turkish. And I have immense joy in receiving the light, the sun of the hearts of people and the potential of our humanity and of this life. And since I was a child, I felt that pleasure in me. So that reflection of light and also my light. How I emerged and how I grew up and how I am here right now in Ibiza is a beautiful journey. I'm a mother of two young daughters, May and Mia, M&Ms, and we live in Ibiza together. And most of my life I lived in Turkey. My mom is a doctor without borders. My father is a pharmacist, but he's more a sportsman. He has been doing professional sport all his life. So I'm a combination of this very devoted woman who is on a mission to save lives, to heal lives, and to serve all of life. And my father using body as an instrument to express our capacity and to socialize and to bring joy to life. When I graduated, I became a product manager in a pharmaceutical company. And soon I noticed what we call health actually is more focused on the sickness than the health of humanity. And I found myself transitioning to media technology with my own startup, Mobilera, in Turkey and Middle East, where we were innovating technologies funded by European Union, such as wearable device communications, and marketing them for masses throughout the brands that who are our clients, such as telco operators, Coca-Cola, Unilever type of companies, to create media marketing campaigns, platforms, and what we call community marketing. So my job was creating solutions for people to improve their lives using these technologies based on the business models of these companies. And my drive has always been, how can we innovate our businesses, the technologies, the social systems in service to life? And we reached to, for example, in a youth community to 18 million people, interacting with them on a daily basis, and learning from them what they need and how through these brands we can serve with better offerings. And this was a very fast and focused job for me. And my metrics besides the business metrics was, how are we improving the quality of their lives and how they perceive themselves in life? How we are really enabling youth to become better agents for their own needs and for the needs of humanity for societal and environmental transformation. The business became very successful, and I started establishing companies around the world and getting a lot of investments. And I noticed the cultural differences, the language differences, and the richness of it. It gave me a lot of joy. I have also encountered how sometimes we are not using our capacity when we are thinking within business boxes, and how potential opportunities are diluted and erased when we were having quarterly target conversations. And when I gave birth to my two daughters, it was an awakening for me where I noticed life is bigger than what I think I can do through business. When I became a mother first, I started also making peace with my own humanity and womanhood. And I started asking one question, which still to this day, I ask this question to myself, whether what I'm doing is in harmony with my values, and whether I want my daughters to grow up with these values, whether it's using and drinking, eating the products that I'm marketing, that I'm selling through the businesses, or whether the cultures, the communication is good for them. And throughout the years, it expanded to all children of this planet. And I really invite everyone to ask this question to themselves, to whatever they are doing, whether it's making a social media post or creating a business model or creating a new technology, is it really good for the children of this planet? And the answer arises as a very clear yes or no. And if it's a no, we have the divine right to change it. So this is how I started operating with my job, with my business. And most of my answers started to emerge as no's rather than yeses. And I made my transition to a design thinking consultancy company called Fjord, which then was acquired by Accenture. I became the country director of one of the biggest design consultancies in the world, bringing design thinking to the markets that we have been operating as the design and innovation umbrella of the biggest consultancy in the world. And there, the design cultures are very interesting because they are process-oriented instead of results-oriented. The process of design thinking really expanded my understanding of how we can operate together, collaborate for better outcomes. And I also noticed the cultural transformation is key. Before we even start imagining any sort of transformation for the world, for our businesses. And I became a business model designer in Accenture, and I started designing the 10-year strategies and the business models that are in harmony with the evolution of the users' expectations and the business's needs. And again, with the question of, is it good for my children and the children of this planet? Soon enough, I noticed our aim, our intention was, and maybe it still is for the company, is to design for love. How can we create products and services that are lovable and increases the capacity of love among humans? But what the outcomes, we can call them unintended consequences, where we were designing for addiction. Even some of the social media platforms that you are using to this date, some banking applications, travel applications, in the background, we were asking the wrong questions sometimes, such as how can we keep people in front of the screens for longer hours or make them feel the fear of missing out if they are not visiting? And this is basically the definition of addiction. And I have also noticed it's not evil people doing evil things. Many people are good people. This is my belief system. But we don't really think well. We don't use our capacity of thinking with its full potential. And then we end up asking reduced questions for reduced outcomes. And that's how we ended up in addiction rather than love. And I noticed in a very big corporation, changing things from within as a single person is not that easy. That's why also I was going through a transition in my life, a divorce process with the father of my children. I noticed I need to reinvent myself. That's why I went to Spain and joined an academy called Socratic Design Academy, where I studied philosophy with a philosopher for 3 years, rewriting my life narrative with my emerging value systems. And I learned a method called Socratic Dialogue, which still to this date is one of my main methodologies that I am using to really listen deeply myself and others and also non-human life so that we can come alive. In the listening, there is magic. In the listening, there is a potential of regeneration, and it is available to all of us. So we don't repeat our thoughts, but we are in the deep listening mode. And from there, I joined different universities as an academician, teaching a methodology that I innovated from the existing business model design to what I call conscious business model design, where in conscious business model design, we start with our own values, potent seed in each one of us that wants to be expressed through our own communications, business models, actions, and design of all systems. And conscious business model design integrates the human values, also the way we can relate to each other in communities, as well as the global goals where we can regenerate from within and regenerate our surroundings. And I have invited many leaders around the world to start implementing conscious business model design, which led us to really create amazing business models that are very regenerative and that are good for all of us. And these prototypes actually are my innovation hub through this methodology. And it is one of my core, again, methodologies that I love experimenting with. And the beauty of it is less about the canvas and the step-by-step to-do practices, but more about the cultural transformation that is happening, especially starting with the psyche of the leader who is participating in it, prioritizing life within us before we even start thinking. So it is an embodied practice in that sense. Then I fell in love again. I was remarried with Rudy, and we established a company called Human Works, which means our humanity actually works, humanity in action. And we moved to Ibiza with my daughters with a conscious decision, because I was seeking for communities and places where my values are prioritized, such as women, especially aging women, receiving respect with their wisdom, being recognized, inclusivity and diversity, not being tolerated or forced, but instead celebrated and encouraged, and nature being so important, being sacred, children valued, and their growth processes are the most important compass, and as well, art and cultures and celebration is a part of everyday rituals. And that I found in Ibiza after being invited to an ayahuasca ceremony here, and my journey totally transformed. I have been living in Ibiza for the last 5 years. We have two platforms. One of them is Regenerate X, where we are bringing regenerative principles to leadership and business through online programs, individual consultancies, corporate consultancies, as well as organizing events, which we call Heart Masters. And it means when we master our minds, the heart masters, and it's a full sentence. And we come together once in Ibiza, one in Anatolia, with regenerative leaders from around the world. We go through a transformation process together. We connect, we bond, and we do conferences to co-create, to collaborate, and embark on an initiation as a community of active game changers. So these are the practices we are doing in Regenerate X. And when COVID started, I noticed even the most knowledgeable and experienced leaders, friends that I have in my network, people didn't know what is coming. And it was such a big portal and opportunity for me to explore. I'm a curious person by nature, and I love learning and unlearning and transformation. I believe in human innovation, and I felt this great calling. And among my conversations with these leaders, I noticed women are more open to explore the unknown with faith and with confidence compared to the men that I have talked to on average. And I had the calling of inviting women leaders to come together to design conscious business models with processes that are allowing us to surrender to unknown, but very confidently start filling our place as humanity. And with that invitation, I called the platform's name The Heroines, and thinking that this is the heroine's journey, not the hero's journey, where the individual success is rewarded and you slay the dragons, but it's a communal journey. It's a collective journey of transformation, embracing our feminine and masculine and our beautiful place as life of this planet, as a community. And the Heroine's Journey is annual journey where we do conscious business design, and our role as women in regeneration, the transformation. And we also focus on the topic of regenerative AI, which I believe is another portal of opportunity for humanity to really ground ourselves in our potential and do things right for the children of this planet. And the fourth dimension we are focusing is life-centric experience design and communication and language as a technology. So these are the four pillars of the Heroines, and it's going really well. It's kind of my heart of everything that I'm doing. And with my superpowers, my daughters, I'm really enjoying my life and my evolution as life of this planet. So this is basically about me, and where I am right now is that I'm exploring more personal and communal transformation methodologies with other communities, and everyday inspirations, whether it's our inner callings, whether it's a conversation, whether it's a mega event happening in the world, I receive them as beautiful invitations for us to readjust what we are thinking about ourselves and how we can really come alive again and again. So it's a beautiful adventure in that sense. It's a beautiful heroine's journey that I am living.
And what you just said in the end, the circular nature of the again and again, and the heroine's journey, is also the pattern that I see across everything you said, which is that you seem to create or receive a lot of energy and agency in the differential between your values and the actual manifestation of those values in action. And where you see a differential, you move into that and into that tension and create action. And that seems to me the central feedback loop that makes you, and from what I heard. And that leads me to a question, because right now it seems to me that this process is a very conscious process for you. Was it always like that? Was it always a conscious process? And if so, where do you think that came from? Why did you have this as a conscious process, or did it evolve to become a conscious process? And when did that happen, and how?
Thank you for this beautiful question. You make me reflect deeply. When I was a child, I grew up in a village where my mom was called for a mission and an obligatory doctorship in a rural area in Anatolia, in Turkey. And I had the opportunity of interacting with soil and worms, ants, and bugs immensely. I was spending most of my life hands-on, feet in the soil, and having kind of friendship with those beings. And I had this awe of how they organize themselves. For example, a worm not having a head or an end, but can equally go both directions, and it's very unpredictable in that sense, and going into the soil. And then later on, I learned the importance of worms for the soil and for all life, only later on. Mm-hmm. But I had great respect for all these beings, and I was observing them and being so curious and entertaining myself with such deep pleasure. When I was pulled out of that soil and that village and the garden, the farm, and we moved to a city, I had this deep sadness in my heart. I couldn't explain what was it, but I was mourning for something that I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't have labels, I didn't have terms. And of course, the separation, the sadness shakes you. And similar in my life journey, I had many, many separations, whether it's leaving a company that I deeply committed to with my missions, or divorce with the father of my children, who I was deeply in love, and I gave birth to two beautiful, amazing girls with him. I had many separations from what I think is love for me and in my mind, and this deep sadness of it. And as I grew up and I became an adult, I had different coping mechanisms with that. Sometimes numbing myself, doing overwork, being a workaholic. Sometimes numbing myself in relations that were not so good for me, whether it's with food, whether it's with drinks or with other people. And those are unconscious experiences for me that grew the hole, that I wanted to fill that hole with other things and other people. And I found my ways, and I'm not saying those ways are super bad. They were my ways of having those experiences. But I had years of feeling disappointed with myself, not knowing what to do with myself. Although I was looking very successful from outside, I wasn't happy inside, and the light in my eyes were dimmed. So this is how I recognized I'm not on the right path when I looked at the mirror. And yet there was always this whisper, and sometimes louder, telling me, what is my path? And that path is sometimes when I look at the mirror and there is a voice, oh, I don't look alive. And then there is a whisper saying, if you're not alive, who is this voice talking to you? So when you ask the question, was it always a conscious journey? Whose consciousness we are talking about? There is always consciousness that we can tap into. And then the way we integrate it, the way we live with it, is our consciousness as individuals, as a community, as humanity. But the consciousness is always there, and it's always learning, and it's always transforming with us, through us, and transforming us. So that capacity is always and will always, I believe, be available to me. So this is how I believe. And those moments when I feel like I'm not aligned with the path, with my true being, I don't see it as a punishment or as a test or a failure anymore. I'm developing a sense of love for myself and for love with compassion and kindness in the way that I am talking to myself. I'm 42 years old, and this is what I really want, especially women, to feel, because if we feel like that, everything becomes a part of the conscious journey, because then we are aligned. You can never fall out of the path. Life gives you the paths according to where you are and what you need to do. So I think we can really be more compassionate and gentle with ourselves and start with where we are, because the journey is always on. It is always on. It doesn't have a beginning and an end. We can have chapters in a book, but there are books of books. So we are here to rewrite it. We are here to walk it. And we are here to share our journeys, including the sad ones, the scary ones, and even the darkest ones, with that light. to others. I think that is when you are on your heroine's journey.
And now, moving from your life as an individual into a slightly broader perspective, I'd like to build on what you said earlier about how you use values to ground action in business modeling, in taking action in the world in general. And the values we're exploring here in this context is, what does a good life look like for humans on this planet? And so, love from the perspective that you've just described of how you enter the world and how you experience the world, unfold what is a good life. We call this Wohlstand, that's our pointer to that concept. The English translation could be something like wealth or prosperity, but ultimately we want to have an idea of what's a good life.
I really like the term. I learned about the term when you invited me to this interview. So thank you for bringing a beautiful word in my life. I love that expansion. That wealth, that prosperity, that good life is when we understand that our role here is to give more life to all and loss to none. If you can really relax into that statement, more life to all and less to none, it starts with yourself. We are here to come alive. We are here to really be ourselves and the more of ourselves. And it's a beautiful unfolding. It's an emerging field of our humanity and life of this planet. And there is such wealth and abundance and prosperity already in as is. There is this, I have this relentless faith in life and in our humanity. It's relentless because sometimes you need to really regenerate yourself in that faith. But it's the faith that I had since my childhood. And life is the direction. So life is the question. Life is the answer. And it's an evolutionary unfolding. And what I believe we can really walk towards that expansion is when we have a purpose, a clarity. And I find it through value systems. And it doesn't mean, okay, I like this and everything shall be like this. No, I am my value. And this is what I teach in the heroines and in all the courses that I'm a part of. For example, my value is inclusivity and diversity, and it means life for me and allowing everyone to become themselves and bring their unique gifts to collaboration for any sort of systems design. And then we have a tendency that when we look at an event, see a person or encounter something, we have a tendency to judge and to start really getting angry with things or people who don't carry similar values. Let's say inclusivity and diversity, and I'm watching what's happening in COP28, and the women are not represented, and many of the voices are not represented. And I might choose to be angry about it. And it's okay to feel angry. But if I stay at that level, my purpose is not fulfilled. My purpose is to become the channel of that inclusivity and diversity. And then by realizing, oh, there can be better inclusivity and diversity here, and then I get into action, I invite people, the organizers, the world leaders, through my posts, through my political campaigns, through the designs that we are doing together with those leaders, how can we be more inclusive and diverse? But then there's another level I can deeply resonate in inclusivity and diversity and even allow the people who don't carry this value or the events who don't carry this value to be, to exist so that I'm inclusive enough to see their reality where I can start inviting where in abundance there is inclusivity and diversity. Maybe another event, maybe nature. Nature and children are always my abundant sources of finding good examples and inspirations because they are innocent lives and expressions of life. So really grounding myself in the gratitude of what is to allow myself to see it. And that would be an invitation for each one of us that when we see the lack of something, we are acting from a victim mode, a blaming mode. And the purpose here is not to stay there. The purpose here is to act on it and to feel gratitude that there is also abundance of it. And even at times that we cannot find good inspirations and examples, just the fact that I can observe lack of something means that I know the abundance of it. How otherwise I can judge, right? So this capacity of being able to see, to reflect, if we can talk, think, and act from that capacity of knowingness, then truly we are moving forward to our purpose. It can be a mundane moment in life. It can be a very important summit like COP28, but this is my invitation. Come from the perspective of your knowingness, where there is abundance of it. And then another stage in moving towards purpose is for life to be beautiful is actually becoming that. If we enter a room, go to an event, participate in a podcast like that, instead of talking about the mentality of inclusivity, diversity, if we can become that, like your beautiful invitation and how you are listening to me right now, we are vibrating that. And it's a beautiful transformation in the moment. And then it's manifested in the moment. And anything that comes out of that moment becomes an expression of that and an extension of it. And whether you are doing a social media post, whether you are talking to your child, whether you are talking to your employees, bring that, and that is purpose manifested. So I don't see any difference in the thinking or in the doing of anything from the being of it. And one thing that I really would love us to practice more is the gratitude. Sometimes in our silo thinking, we separate and reduce events to what we think we observe. But even when you allow yourself to take a couple of breaths and contemplate on it as a community, as a team, you start seeing that you are in it together and something bigger than you is in play, and that's life. And life deserves a constant gratitude. Just the fact that I can speak to you in a language that I wasn't raised with through a technology that has been imagined, invented, executed, and made available to us, just in this moment, I can find a million gratitudes, and it expands us into what we think life is. Let's don't try to make life beautiful or good for everyone from a mental structure. Let's expand in the gratitude of it and allow it to be beautiful in us and through us. That would be my invitation. And of course, the most beautiful, delicious part is, why do we have hands? Why do we have eyes? Why do we have the technologies of speaking and language? Because we love to take action. And from that place of faith, purpose, gratitude, when you take action, you are carried way beyond the destinations that you think you can reach. And for me, that brings a lot of hope, that type of action, because, and I call it impeccable positivism and hope, with that type of applied hope, we can truly transform everything in one generation. If we allow our children to grow up with such adults, around such adults, in one generation we can restore, replenish, and regenerate ourselves in harmony with life of this planet, and this planet being transformed and being evolutionary with its spin around the sun and the solar systems. So what I'm saying is, sometimes we overcomplicate things, but without that harmony, attunement, the action we are doing is actually damaging, hurting us, and delaying some of the beauties that we can experience together. And then we can call it a beautiful life, I believe, with that type of focus and attention and openness to each other. As I shared, inclusivity and diversity is my kind of place to start with all of this. And it starts with me, embracing my whole self, embracing my community, and embracing life as is a window of opportunity for us to tap into any sort of potential and harmonize ourselves with life. And I'm talking like this, but it's very also practical. For example, if you consider technology, how can technology be in service to betterment of life for all life of this planet? Then you end up, okay, how can we make it more inclusive and diverse? And that's why I also work with regenerative AI. How can we enable people to really make their own AI more intelligent and use all the diversity of different AI models that help them to embark on their journeys for the betterment of their lives and their communities? That's the regenerative AI approach. You can apply it to any domain in life, any economic system, any design process. I'm so confident about it. And the only invitation is to really ground yourself in this life as a very intelligent and hoped for species that is awaiting for us to come alive and again and again.
Oh. You're putting life at the center. You combine that with trust in life itself and also in humanity. And you're binding that with action and agency towards purpose that is then embedded in life again. That's what I'm hearing as a central definition of wealth, of good life. Now you've built companies, all sorts of organizations. You have and are working with all sorts of leaders across different fields, politics, economy, etc. And you are also aware of the current predicament that we've slid in as humanity, in which we have created a system that has become really, really good and is becoming increasingly better at turning nature into waste and humans into exhausted shells of themselves. And now the question, next question that I have around this is, what would be the principles, the first principles, the generator functions, the outlines of a system that is conducive to life, where life is at the center, that nurtures life, and with that all 10 billion people that we soon will be on this planet. What are your thoughts around that, to actually bring this into the world and feed everybody, heat every house, build every house that we need, all of these things that we have to take care of?
I'm an innovation lover. And I see innovation possibilities everywhere whether it's politics, whether it's economies, whether it's the technological domains. And in all of that, when we approach to innovation, the invitation is to make it life-centric. And life has a couple of principles that is available to us with abundant examples and learning processes. Either it's through our bodies, either it's through our countries, our companies, it's available. Data is available, learning is available. And the first one is being open, because most of the time things are available, but we are not open to receiving them. We are not open to learning from them. And why? Because many of us are scared. Scared that it's going to take too much time, it's going to cost us something, or whether we are going to lose our ground. And we feel the threat of the unknown, like it happened in the COVID. Now, the microclimate, a lot of polarization around the world with the climate. So how can we really allow ourselves to learn, to be open from life and from each other, and allow each other to be in their own being without trying to adjust them to a familiar concept or a familiar form that we can relate? And the answer always lies into really allowing ourselves to feel our feelings. We are so scared to be scared. We don't want to be scared, and we find all control mechanisms to avoid that. And we are so intelligent, so we find very sneaky ways to avoid that. So what if I allow myself to feel the fear, feel the sadness, feel all sorts of things, and without acting on them, allow myself to feel? I think one of the worst things we have done to ourselves is to cut ourselves from our emotions, especially in business, and thinking that they are not relevant. And in the recent years, we are opening to more healings with trauma-informed cultural developments, and asking people and leaders especially to be more emotionally intelligent. But what I'm inviting here is not a leadership course. It is a humanship invitation. Mm-hmm. We have feelings, and those feelings mm-hmm. are our guiding system. Like how a technology becomes more intelligent with more sensors and data analysis processes, as humans, we can allow ourselves to feel and create conditions where people are allowed to feel and they are not punished for it, or they are not rejected because of them. So that these shells that you have mentioned, we turn out to be exhausted shells. What if we start regenerating by embracing our feelings and really open ourselves to come alive on a daily basis by allowing ourselves, oh, I had this conversation now, how do I feel? Oh, I'm reading this news now, mm-hmm. how am I feeling? Instead of jumping into answering and writing a hate speech to someone who we believe is a threat to mm-hmm. our thinking system. And when we start allowing our feelings, mm-hmm. you see that there is a thought behind that feeling. And most of the time we are repeating our thoughts instead of thinking fresh. And by listening our emotions and listening each other deeply, we can allow ourselves to receive new information that we have cut ourselves from, which is truly another torture. And we train our children and we train our employees and ourselves in systems where thinking fresh is not encouraged, but knowing the best is still encouraged the most. And we know what we know took us until this far, which I'm grateful for. But in order to move forward, we need to come alive. We need to transform the way we are thinking. And with that thinking capacities, I believe it's the best technology available to humanity. We can truly pull all the resources, all the connections, and make things happen. But if we don't relax in our being and allow ourselves to feel, I'm afraid we are going to keep on thinking what we are thinking and avoid the uncertainty, the fear factors, and what we call others. We will keep on othering instead of belonging. The part that is not so visible is that we are doing it to ourselves on a daily basis. We want to be efficient, we want to be fast, and we deny some of our needs because we don't allow ourselves to take a breath, to feel, and to find what is the imitation of life here. So what does it mean, Thomas? If we design education systems where children are allowed to think, to question, to feel their emotions, and emotions don't come as like an alternative approach to it, but is in the center of being human and being to grow up. And adults can support that by creating healthy relationships with children, listening to them and allowing them to express their emotions and thoughts in creative ways. And then the adults start transforming because children are amazing inspirational guides for us to remember what it means to be in childlike awe and wonder and openness. And if you carry it to your teams, if you carry it to your boards, if you carry it to your governments, what can come alive there? We don't lack anything. We have the intelligence. We have the money. We have the technology. We can cure all sicknesses. We can regenerate all soil. We have enough abundance to feed everyone on this planet. But we need to introduce this also to the food systems, which you are doing amazingly with Motherland. The way we eat, we are not feeling and thinking. We are cut from nature. We are cut from the food and that potential of a relationship, how I can relate to food and how it transforms me when I'm eating it, how my body is working. My body, my entire system is more than 10 billion organisms. So if I can maintain in a healthy way, despite my disconnection, why not? We cannot thrive on this beautiful planet with more than 10 billion people in healthier ways of relating and belonging.
So how I would summarize the essence that I heard is that I'm building this on Daniel Kahneman and his and Amos Tversky's idea of that 90-95% of our decision-making process in everyday life happens based on heuristics that are expressed as feelings. And if I use the definition of the soul, that the soul is for feelings, what the mind is for thoughts, then I would say that we've been focusing on building our bodies. We might also have done some work in building our minds, but we have to build our souls. Now, there's the actual work that needs to happen towards the world you envision is something like a soul set shift. That's how I would see that. And in addition to that, I would like to tap into the material aspect of what you're describing. And I like using the picture of the fermented tea that many people love called kombucha, because you can ferment this tea with a culture called SCOBY within a week, some tea, some sugar, and some thyme. And you can then carburate that further with whatever fruit you would like to add. And you can create the most delicious drinks from that. But as you do this, your SCOBY doubles in size every week. And as we know, doubling in size in a discrete time frame is an exponential growth curve. In this case, if one person starts sharing their SCOBY, and then in that line, everybody starts sharing their SCOBY too, in 7 weeks, all of humanity stop buying other fizzy drinks and just use kombucha. And if you then move away from this, and pun totally intended, sweet certain example of how to do that in the form of kombucha and into things that we actually might need to build our houses. It turns out that we can use the same kind of principle to build houses. They can use microorganisms to bind loose materials like sand or dust or earth into, or waste streams, into usable materials to build structures like houses. So that's all of the descriptions you were giving around the tapping into the abundance of life itself actually has a material grounding, a physical grounding in the natural processes. And if you look at the planet and how the planet has been doing this for the last couple of billion years, it has sorted atoms, more or less 4 to 6 atoms that constitute all of life, and run this on the 172,000 terawatts of sunlight that this big fusion reactor sends us for free, and has been doing running a circular economy on top of that that is so much more powerful and so much more elegant than anything we could do with these 19 terawatts coming from fossil fuels that we're creating right now. So I get the sense that this is the kind of material layer that emerges out of your understanding of how we should be doing this economy and society thing. Is that a fair summary for how you see these things?
It is fair and so beautiful and such abundance to the conversation. Thank you. When you were sharing the examples from nature and the possibilities for humans, I also want to invite what is evolving here is our intelligence. So even the systems that we have created, such as money systems, in the beginning, actually, it was to ease living together and creating together and honoring each gift of each individual with what they can produce for the community, and increase the services and the products that an individual can benefit throughout a lifetime. When you look at today, we have such abundance in the way that we are living that wasn't probably possible to even kings and queens hundreds of years ago. So there is this evolution, there is this intelligence, and comes also the need to satisfaction. That hole that I was mentioning about in the beginning. And we notice, yes, there is such abundance of food and all sorts of products and services, but something in us wants to live better together. And then the imitation here, thanks money, thanks all these systems, all corporations made it possible. But now what? How can money be a better tool to live together better instead of creating fear and disease and all sorts of things? So this is where we stand. And this requires inclusivity and diversity within us and among us, and to keep on being inspired from nature and create beautiful ways of expression through our systems as humanity. And this is actually a very evolved journey that we are on. And it's such a pleasure to be alive right here, right now. And the attitude here is not right or wrong, but like, how can we live better together? And at any given moment to any organization, you can introduce this question. And the kombucha example, how can we apply it to other systems? Amazing. Let's do it and enjoy the kombuchas together.
Yes, in grown houses with running on photosynthesis. And I mean, ultimately, if you look at the current food waste that is produced by subsidies that ask farmers to throw away certain amounts of food to stabilize the markets, if you could use the sugar and starches in those and directly converts those into ethanol that you could then use to heat and move stuff. Right? So we're actually wasting a lot of life and nature in that way. But it's these kinds of abundant translations into the material worlds coming from the mind and soul set you're describing are basically everywhere. And we just have to tap into them.
A lot of this waste and a lot of the deaths and violence we are seeing in the world. It is our job to really transform them into a compost of intelligence for ourselves and for the next generations to benefit from, so that they are not wasted, so they are not shedded for nothing.
Mm-hmm. And in that, I would like to try to find that or maybe something else into something that's, if you were to have godlike powers, that you could give us a deep insight, all humans, and something that sits within us as naturally as breathing, something that is just part of our nature. And that makes this possible, this tapping into life, into abundance, and ensuring that there is the same kind of possibility of tapping into life and abundance and love for future generations. If you were to give us such an insight, what would you give us?
A beautiful question. Thank you for that. It's such a big question. Something that is good for everyone and that is going to be induced in everyone. I believe that it is already in everyone. And that insight, that guidance system is inherently in all of us. And working in ways that are more intelligent than I can ever imagine or start understanding about, I'm discovering my own. And my invitation to receive that intelligence and your next step on the right path would be to listen. Listen deeply. Listen as if you are listening to the most important message of your entire life with every heartbeat. Listen to another person as if that person is the most intelligent, is the most important person, and is going to tell you a secret. Because listen to your garden as if the garden has some magic to share with you. Because this is exactly what is. In that listening is your treasure. In that listening is your invitation for expansion. In that listening, you will remember why you are here and how you want to come alive. And in that listening, there is immense love. And there is only love. And in that listening, we can remember our sacred potential as humanity. Because it is given to us. And it is being whispered, told, and sometimes with huge incidents that hurt us, screamed and yelled at us. Listen. Listen deeply.
And I thank you so much for this beautiful, delightful, insightful conversation. It's an absolute delight. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Thomas. It was my true pleasure. What a beautiful union. Looking forward to our reunions.
Thank you. Me too.